This is Patricia Raskin Positive Living on News Talk 630, WPRO, and 99.7 FM, the program that brings you practical strategies and positive solutions to help you live the kind of life you really want. To speak with Patricia and her guest, call 438-WPRO or toll free at 1-800-321-WPRO. Now, here's Patricia Raskin.
Hi, everyone, and welcome. Welcome to our second hour of Patricia Raskin Positive Living. I'm very excited about this next interview. I was so happy to... who I think is an icon in health. Dr. Andrew Weil, deemed the father of integrative medicine. And he tackles the epidemic, which is depression, and we've been talking about that today. Named in 2006 as one of Time Magazine's most 100 most influential people, Dr. Andrew Weil has hugely transformed the practices of modern American medicine. His Arizona Center for Integrative Medicine is the leading provider of integrative medicine education worldwide, and he has trained more than 400 fellows in the philosophy and practice of healing-oriented medicine, addressing the body, the mind, and the spirit. He's the best-selling book of Spontaneous Healing and 8 Weeks to Optimum Health. And his newest book, which we talk about now, is called Spontaneous Happiness. He's a New York Times best-selling author. So listen to this. Enjoy. I'll be back with you live, and we're going to talk about this interview. And do enjoy who I deem to be the father of integrative medicine. Thank you, Dr. Andrew Weil, for being on the program. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
I want to ask you first what you feel is emotional well-being.
I think the characteristics of emotional well-being are contentment, serenity, balance, resilience. I think those are the qualities you want to strive for. And I don't mention happiness there because I think happiness is really not the goal. I think contentment is a much better thing to strive for. That's an inner sense of things being fulfilled and okay that are relatively independent of external circumstances.
Can you be happy when there's unhappiness in your life, or contented, you know, if you want to lose weight or find the right mate or be healthier or make more money? Can you have contentment?
I think you can, and I think you can be serene and accepting of circumstances, and I think that's really the key to emotional well-being. You can't always control what happens to you, but what you can control is your reaction to what happens to you. And I think it's possible to retrain the mind to experience more of that, whatever your external circumstances are.
You talk about training the mind. You talk about mindfulness-based stress reduction, MBSR. What is that?
This is a very robust movement that's based on Buddhist psychology. It's based on the principle of keeping the attention focused in the here and now, in the present moment. It's been widely used for dealing with pain in medical situations and many other forms of chronic disease, but it's widely applicable. It seems to improve performance in many sorts of skills and jobs. And it's simply a matter of training the mind to be present, not to let your attention wander into the unreality of the past or future.
There are some other things as well. You also talk about positive psychology, which is the intervention of pleasure, flow, and meaning. What are some of the modalities in positive psychology, like visualization and meditation?
Yeah, you know, the basic principle of positive psychology is that if you study people who are emotionally well, people who are optimistic and positive, you can learn ways that they use their minds and then teach these to other people. For example, there's a great deal of evidence about the power of gratitude to boost mood. And there's an exercise from positive psychology that I really like. It's called keeping a gratitude journal. You get a little notebook that you dedicate to this purpose. Keep it by your bedside. During the day, you make mental notes of things to be grateful for. When you go to bed, jot them down in the book. Doing this for 1 week can boost mood for up to 6 months. That's remarkable.
Yeah, it is remarkable. You talk about mantras as another way to train the mind.
This is an Eastern technique of repeating a syllable or phrase, and it actually, in Western religion, this is also used, such as saying the Catholic Rosary, for example. It's a technique of avoiding mental static. That is, by repeating a phrase, you can take your mind off of thoughts that create fear or negative moods. And there's, again, there's interesting medical research showing that this is very helpful for people working in stressful situations, people dealing with chronic illness.
So prayer would do that, wouldn't it? Because those are repetitive phrases.
Absolutely. And, you know, one book that I read on this, there's a book called The Mantram Handbook, written by an Indian spiritual teacher who likens this to, I love this image. He says that in festivals in India, there are often elephants in processions, and the elephants going through markets and crowded areas can be very destructive with their trunks, of, like smashing things and grabbing fruit, and that the rider of the elephant will often give the elephant a stick, which it holds aloft in its trunk. And this man likened the repetition of a mantra to that stick for the mind. Mm. It keeps the restless mind still and focused.
Mm. Another thing you talk about is mental nutrition, you know, watching what you watch in the media and listen to.
If you watch a lot of sad movies and television programs and read sad books and listen to sad music, the chances are that you will be sadder than if you listen to other things. So I think, you know, we have a choice here, and it's worth paying attention to what you feed your mind, what you expose your senses and your mind to.
Dr. Weil, why is there so much depression now? I mean, we hear about it more now than ever.
Some of it is, I think, manufactured by the medical pharmaceutical industry, which has convinced people that ordinary states of sadness are imbalances in brain chemistry that require treatment with drugs. But if we take that away, we're still left with a lot of depression. I think, in essence, it's a mismatch between the life our genes prepared us for and the life that most of us actually live.
And when you say that, I think about our life 100 years ago or 200 years ago, where we were with family and community. There's a lot of isolation now.
That's key. Increased social isolation predisposes to depression and poor mental health, and this has become very prominent in our culture. We're also disconnected from nature. We are not getting the physical activity that we need. We are subject to information overload on all channels. I think all these things combine to produce the depression.
And what about technology? I mean, texting and emails are great, but it's isolating.
On a huge influence on our minds and mental function, and I think it's important to find ways to limit that. You know, I try in my own life at some point in the afternoon to disconnect from computers and cell phones and then not reconnect till the next day. And I think unless you do that, it has a tendency to take over your life and make you crazy.
What about dietary supplements? What about nutrition for emotional well-being?
There's a strong connection between inflammation and depression. I've long recommended an anti-inflammatory diet, which is a version of the Mediterranean diet. Doesn't deny you any pleasure from food, but I think the mainstream diet rich in processed, refined, manufactured foods promotes inflammation and depression. As for supplements, the best evidence we have is for fish oil. I think everyone should take 2 to 4 grams of fish oil a day, whether or not you eat fish. And vitamin D. I think it's good to take 2,000 IU of vitamin D a day. Both have very significant influences on brain function.
So vitamin D, even if you're in a sunny climate and you're getting a lot of sun?
People in sunny climates are using sunscreen, which blocks vitamin D synthesis. Mm. So if you haven't had your vitamin D levels checked, it's a good idea to get them checked. If they're very low, you may need higher doses for a short term to bring them up.
Let's talk about exercise and physical activity and why that's so critical.
The evidence is that physical activity is as powerful an intervention as pharmaceutical drugs for both the treatment and prevention of depression. In my own life, I found this to be extremely valuable. You don't have to run marathons. You don't have to work with a personal trainer. You don't have to go to gyms. You want to move your body every day. You want to be physically active. Walking can serve perfectly well if you do enough of it.
But acupuncture for emotional well-being.
There's some evidence that acupuncture can treat depression symptomatically. I think it depends a lot on who the practitioner is. We don't have very strong evidence for that, but there's some. So it's an intervention worth trying.
Right. Well, acupuncture also, where those meridian points are important, aren't they? Because you can do acupressure and also do some tapping along those meridian points.
Yes, and touch in general has a positive effect on mood. And I think, you know, we are also a relatively touch-deprived society. Touch releases a hormone called oxytocin, which seems to promote social bonding and trust. And there's an interesting body of scientific research on that.
You know, one of the things that plagues a lot of people that's happened for me is this rumination, you know, the depressive rumination where that thought will go around and around in your brain and you keep worrying and you can't get it out. What's your advice?
Well, one possibility is to try cognitive behavioral therapy. This is a new form of psychotherapy that's very time and cost effective, and it retrains the mind and can help with depressive rumination. Another strategy, totally different, is to practice some form of meditation, to use mantra repetition, which we talked about. Those are various techniques to break that cycle.
Okay. And you said before you were talking about some of the things we can do with nature. You also talk about relating to animals and why animals can help us heal.
I think living with companion animals can have a very beneficial effect on mood. I can't imagine life without dogs. As I'm talking to you, my two dogs are lying with me right here. There's, again, a good body of scientific evidence that people who have companion animals enjoy better emotional health, recover faster from illness, and generally have more enriched lives. So I think this is something to consider, and that requires some thought, because you want to make sure that you can handle the responsibility of an animal, that you choose the right animal. It doesn't have to be a dog. Cats work well. Birds, even reptiles, you can see this effect with.
Animals will give us unconditional love.
They do that, and I think to have something in your life that gives you unconditional love is a very powerful effect.
Also, art and beauty, whether it's going to a museum or appreciating a painting or going to the arts, why is that so healing for us, Dr. Weil?
You know, I think the world is both beautiful and ugly, and it's up to us what we choose to focus on. And there's so much bombarding us, especially on television news, for example, about things that provoke fear and anxiety and senses of helplessness. And I think voluntarily putting yourself in situations where you focus on things that are beautiful, whether man-made or natural, I think that has an uplifting effect that cancels out some of the other.
And another thing that is helpful is forgiveness. You know, really understanding what happened and letting it go and forgiving it.
Yeah, and I think the key there is that forgiveness is something you do for yourself. It's not about the other person. In fact, the other person doesn't even have to know about it. It's releasing a toxic burden that you're carrying. And that can be very powerful. It also can be tricky. You know, I mentioned gratitude earlier. Gratitude is a lot easier. There's nothing in the way of doing that. It's just a matter of remembering it. Forgiveness can be tricky because you have to deal with, you know, the question of whether you are exonerating the other person or excusing them from guilt. And I think the way around that is to just remind yourself that forgiveness is not about the other person, it's about you.
Well, it's also about releasing anger, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's, as I said, it's a toxic emotional burden that you're carrying around and that you're giving up.
So when you forgive, do you think it changes your life?
I have collected so many stories. I put some of them in the book about people who practice forgiveness and had dramatic change in emotional well-being immediately following.
Another one we don't talk enough about, Dr. Weil, is laughter and smiling. I mean, remember Norman Cousins, who laughed himself to health.
Well, now there are these laughter clubs all over the place. You know, an Indian doctor invented this system called laughter yoga, and there are clubs all over, and basically, people get together in groups and simulate laughter under the direction of a leader. And when you do this in groups, the laughter rapidly becomes real. This has major lasting effects.
Right.
Another interesting phenomenon that's been documented is that when you simulate an emotion, it becomes real. I mean, this is something that every good actor knows. But, you know, when you smile, it actually produces feelings of happiness in yourself and in others.
You have an 8-week program for optimum emotional well-being. Tell us about that and how people can learn more about it.
Well, you know, I've over the years learned that it's easiest for people to make changes in their lives if they do small steps and build incrementally. And I've found that 8 weeks is a good period of time in which to make these changes. So I've broken down all of my recommendations into simple steps, beginning with changing diet, increasing physical activity, using certain supplements, doing mental exercises, some of the forgiveness and gratitude practices that we talked about. And I've organized these into a step-by-step 8-week program. And I am quite confident that if people follow this, at the end of 8 weeks, you will be on a new emotional footing that's much healthier.
And your website is?
DrWeil.com, DrWeil.com. There's a great deal of archived information there about medical conditions of all sorts and treatments, and it's just a good resource.
Dr. Weil, I have followed your work for many years, and it is a great honor to have you on this program. Thank you so much. All right, folks, that was our terrific interview with Dr. Weil. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be right here at the Warwick Mall at the Fit for Life Expo with Dr. Tad Stokowski from the Center for Preventive Medicine, and we're going to talk about the interview. Stay tuned, folks. You're listening to Patricia Raskin Positive Living right here on News Talk 630 WPRO and 99.7 FM. We'll be right back.